Blog Talk Radio.
Together again. Welcome, Masonic Effects. It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be. And thank you for joining us around the world, wherever that may be. Russia or Brazil or, South Africa or Japan or the United States or Greece or Britain, Great Britain, yes, and of course Canada and parts in between, and we have new listeners tuning in. So we're going to talk a bit about masonry and around that theme loosely, but you know what produces masonry, I think, is the context of your thoughts, of your life, you know, that point where you're searching out for a different understanding of, or an enriched understanding, but it dangles this carrot for us, the good life. And so, as Marcus Aurelius tended to throw out to us, the essence of a good life is to a happy life is within us. And that's kind of troubling. It doesn't say that a good life is domestic bliss, domestic meaning day by day, because we all have challenges day by day, things we need to do, places we need to be, and continuity. Projects that we've begun that require a bit of self-discipline, and always new challenges and always the unexpected. I think it's easy for us to see that some people are, the wheel of fortune is not kind to everybody, but it is the wheel of fortune. It is the fates that affect all of us. And there's nobody that is able to erase that. We can try, and many do, as you know, but we don't exist without that randomness, that little spot in the yin yang. You see, remember that little squiggle? You'll look, and there's often a little dot, and the dot represents the randomness of it all. Yes, it fits together. Fire and ice, you need love and hate. We need these things to fit together. We don't have one without, we don't have light without darkness, you know, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we are curious, a curious bunch. And that's what a big part of the theme or topic that I want to share with you or talk with you about today. I'm sometimes they do a longer preamble in setting up to setting up the show. Other days I do tend to be a bit brief. Today I think brevity is required. I want to dispel any sense that there is one path or there's a competing sense of ability out there in masonry. We have some, we can admit certain things. We have the number of people that are attracted to Freemasonry who have the abilities to and the interest, the motivation to become, to develop a scholarly understanding, whatever that might be. We understand that between us, that there are some of us that are scholars. It really is a matter of sifting of all the people that come to Freemasonry. And we all don't achieve those levels. We're not remade. Some people come to the order with the scholarly ability. Others may not have discovered that yet. I think if I accosted my dear old grandfather, who said, you're a scholar in your own way, he would have just shaken his head and said, yeah, there you go, boy. You're a lovely grandson. But the point is, he came to be wise. I don't ever have a sense that there was an amount of material that he understood. He just had this wisdom. And I don't know, can you have that with a spoonful of knowledge, or do you need it all? or is the wisdom knowing that it's not, that the amount isn't as important as what you do with it? He was... So we don't need to compete. We can visit these things now. The internet. Oh my goodness! We can visit from wherever we are if we have a link. And I think there's a clamor to get us to sign up the communications to a communication system. The big powers are trying to align, with us. And we're in the middle of a shift in hegemony. It always is. There's always the shift. It's either coming or going. The power base. We're talking. We can visit some of the finest the finest collections of material. Am I wrong here, brethren? Am I wrong thinking that in order for masonry to come together, to figure it out, you need to have a bit of a liberal, you do have to have a liberal, listen to me, I'm blah, 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 and all vague. You need a liberal education. I don't find integrity. I don't find an understanding of integrity in Masonic ritual. I can find, I think it's refined. But where do I go? To where did I learn that? I go to the arts, because the arts have been teaching about the human condition from a safe distance forever. They can poke fun at our mediocrity and our overbearing. They can tell us, show us pain. They can reveal truths to power, the arts. Who would I turn to? Would I turn to, Herman Melville's book, Moby Dick? What does that say? It taught me things about integrity. Would I be looking, would I look at sort of the Orwellian material to examine the notion of truth? Or do I do, in order to have a stronger sense of the human condition, do I read the work of Somerset Maugham? That delicacy, that filigree of idea, of emotion, of purpose, and relationship. Oh, it's just breathtaking. Or do, in understanding proximity, do I think about Heinlein's work, the great, one of the great science fiction writers, Stranger in a Strange Land. Do I learn about brotherhood through J.R.R. Tolkien's work, Lord of the Rings? I can hear the ideas and I can be taught the word, but the meaning, or do I look at the the foolishness of man? Do I learn that from sitting in the audience watching Shakespeare's King Lear? Or do I see the bone-crushing tragedy of Macbeth? Or that sense of the bizarre? The arts, what I'm getting at here is the arts, or the paintings. If you think of a piece of work that conveys, I'm not 13 anymore, so I'm not thinking about, you know, bigger is better and the whoever, you know, the imperialist nation paid to, you know, for advertising isn't necessarily the way it is. You know, the history, as it glibly was said, to be written by the victorious. Well, it isn't anymore, is it? We're starting to fill in the gaps. The victorious are being humbled by the reality. The Spanish conquistador were not these noble, this noble power host. They brought pestilence that wiped out entire populations of vulnerable tribes and cultures, might we add. Are we examining Greek history, and how do we separate that from the Elgin marbles? You know, what happened? This term that's new for me, the cultural appropriation. Who gave anybody the authority to take artifacts from around the world because you had bigger guns and claim them for your own people? Well, that had been done for thousands of years, but not anymore. We're into this other ugly stage of accountability. Oh my goodness, our smartphones are smarter than our politicians. And they're not very happy with it, because we're picking up these rocks, and what we're seeing underneath is the illusion. They make very generous and magnanimous claims, and then they don't follow through. It's like, whoa, well, you know, that's really a brilliant idea. They're going to solve this problem, and they've committed all this resources to it. It's wonderful. I can sleep well at night and move on. Oh, but we find that often that's the creating an illusion, and they know that they can get away with it if accountability isn't in place. And oh my goodness, somebody is sitting down with their laptop or their iPad or a phone that it contains so much history, past and current, and we're able to construct timelines and construct these algorithms ourselves. The world has gone to hell because the population, the citizenry, are producing science. It's no longer in the hands of the monarchs or the demagogues or the ideologues. It's out there, and the ideas are startling. You know, just desktop laboratories and desktop writers. And you think about it, it's like a fulfillment of a dream that we now have that access. Oh my goodness, don't ask me and don't compare me. You know, I'm just a sea slug here. I'm a chip of wood moving along in the stream. Oh, cut it out. You're not at all. I'm starting to write and talk more about stereotype and archetypes. And I wanted to bring this up with you because I think there's a part that's really quite, I think, daunting and important. The key archetype to follow is you. Well, not to be clever. We are a body that, however many of us might start off with this lovely idea, you know, it's like me and my buddies that used to say, well, you know, we should open our own bar, our own pub. It's wonderful. Well, we all love the idea, but the actual practicality of it was hard work. And who wants to be out that late every night, you know, getting in at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after closing? And the amount of work that's required and the preparation and the coordination, it's the people that do that and put on a smile, that's exquisite. That's just lovely. But we like the idea, but the actual work, well, I think that spills over into masonry. It's lovely. Like, sign me up. This is great. It's like the adventure, you know, venture of a lifetime. I want to be there. But the mornings are cold and the nights are long, and it's not all cheery. It's like there's grunt work that has to be done. I may be talking to you about, you know, producing a program, but I don't sit down and share with you the hours of preparation that's required. But then again, like many of you, I find the preparation of things that I'm interested in is not a task. It's like something that I really do enjoy doing. And I don't know if I can say that that's because of masonry, but masonry did see, you know, it has these little messages that I think I find kind of profound. You know, aligning your wants and your needs. I thought that was the most beautiful idea when I first heard that. I just thought, well, that makes perfect sense. And it wasn't like, can it be done? It's like, yeah, I just never thought of that. And with this program, it's a blend of want and need, and it's not a task. Could somebody make me do this? I suppose you could make me write, and somebody used to do that. And I used to write every day, all kinds of material. For years and years and years, and I was the person that would often tell you, no, I'm not a good writer. But after a while, you learn how the words are putting ideas together, and you want that those ideas to reflect reality. You learn that. We have those little little pearls of wisdom throughout masonry. And is it all the time, 24/7? That's ridiculous. You need to fill in live masonry. It's not like being preoccupied with the thoughts. The thoughts are just there. But what it does, I think, and I wonder if some of you will share this, when you look at something or you're doing something, don't you ever find that you're making a connection with something Masonic? Like, oh, that's what that means. Oh, that's what that phrase or that passage is getting at. Or I wonder if that's the passage, if that's the understanding. I wonder. So we find those clues. I look at a field of daffodils, and I'm thinking about Wordsworth, and I'm thinking about what the message is, this sense of joy. And this rapture with nature, this rapport with nature. And do I think that that's part of the craft unleashes that? I absolutely do. It asks us, it's so, you know, mischievous. It asks us for an open mind. Oh my God, you know, do that. And there's no telling what's going to come next. And then we wrestle with, well, we need this constitutional authority. You know, we don't want to be practicing like those, that Orient over there. You know, what they have those radical ideas. Well, a lot of the ideas, when you examine them, like everything else, when you look closely at them, they're not that radical. But popularism doesn't stop for understanding. Just, you know, we can crash ahead and make our suppositions and guesses and speculations that fit our own narrative. Oh, and then along comes Masonry and says, yeah, you don't have to do that. If you want to do that, go ahead. But if you're interested in, you know, finding contentment, here's some, you know, think about this and just reconsider definitions. Well, you know, I already know the language and I know, but you don't know the lexicon of Masonry, do it. The more we think in that way, that idea that we become what we do, and we, if we do it repeatedly. So the idea of, you know, it struck me as odd. You're saying if I think good thoughts or I think positive thoughts, that's what I'll become. Balderdash. I'm an empiricist. That's just not the case. It's more complicated than that. But truth is, that's you. If you're performing, you want to be. If you notice things, there's an old, you know, old for me because I'm old, a notion that the areas that you find in your life that are rife with tension are likely shortcomings, your own personal shortcomings. And the question is, how have you contributed to that? So if there's tensions at home, how do you contribute? Well, you know, it's not like I have to acknowledge that. It's like it's undeniable. It's undeniable. There's it reveals, that kind of thinking reveals so much. But can you make somebody do it? Who the hell would want to? If a person isn't capable of figuring that out for themselves, that's something that they want to do, well, that's them. That's perfectly reasonable. But on the other hand, when we look at the writings that inspire, that you think about the millions of men that have come before us and people that have come before us, men and women of science and arts, we have the advantage of sorting through some baseless opinions. You know, we have all of that nonsense that went on about debasing Masonry. I shouldn't say nonsense. I qualify that. People were grifters. They were making a buck, making up stories about Masonry, you know, and played on people's suspicions, which is quite normal. And then there was a finger pointed. Where do we sit idly? Why aren't we defending ourselves? Well, how do you defend? How does enlightenment defend itself? How does understanding? You know, that's what we are trying to embody, trying. And how do we defend ourselves? You are. You be the ideas. Does it sound like I'm wearing saffron robes and handing out incense in an airport? Well, I'm not. I'm an old guy that is associated with all things. Ungraciously mean about the world. And we're in a new age. There's new influences happening, and I'm okay with that. And I've left. It's like, I don't know if you, do you think a person, a man, can shed his skin and just be remade and reinvented? I won't claim that, but I think there's a lot of Masonry that tells us that you can be a better version. That you can separate, leave yourself, but leave that version of you behind, learn from mistakes, learn from bad judgment, and learn the consequences and prevail until you no longer need to be making those mistakes and learning from them. You can learn from the ideas of other people, of other writers around. And then you begin to write your own narrative. You become the refinement. If I ask you what the point, which direction is it pointing in, isn't it pointing us to a refinement of our own spiritual understanding, our own awareness, our own being, our own function? the making us a sincere and genuine human being. Well, is that your definition of an archetype? Oh, well, let's scramble. Let's, while the music is on today, let's plunge into Carl Jung's work on that. It's nice to have you here. It is. I'm not going to lie. It is just an absolute pleasure, and to show you how much you mean. Just sitting here and having this conversation, it is a conversation, and I'm expecting the other side of the conversation from you, or you and your mates. Here's a little John Coltrane quartet. Violets for your furs, yeah. Decent. big overpowered North American cars weren't the only thing that came out of 1957. Coltrane, tenor sax, Red Garland, any of you out there listening in, getting older? No, I know. I don't live in a youth culture or youth cult, but the media tells me I do that this is this surge. You know, all these preparations have, you know, lotions and potions that are going to extend life, and they don't really. But it's billions and billion-dollar industries based on this, so it must be good if you're pulling in that kind of profit. Oh, and the people and the little ones going hungry, just turn that away. It's their own fault. You know, they were born wrong. And here, let's pull this together. We notice things. I'm not one of the people that brags about never having regrets. I have regrets. Oh my goodness. I don't know if I have lots. I don't know what lots are. I have some. I have enough. And I don't dwell on them day by day. I don't think that's necessarily healthy or necessary. It's in spite of what the fear mongers might be saying. Acknowledge it and move on. You have to. Hindsight is just such an interesting little trip, isn't it? It just produces so much information when you look over your shoulder and say, what in the hell? What was that? Where were we going? What was I doing? I'm one of those people that thinks, this age, I just had a birthday a little while ago, and I remember, if I only, could I have squeezed more out of my 30s or my 40s or my 50s? Well, yeah, of course. Anybody could say that, couldn't they? But at the end of the day, am I satisfied? And yeah, I'm satisfied that I'm truthful, that I move forward, my mistakes didn't just get under my skin, that I could do something about them. I learned from that too. I learned that I don't have to pretend with myself that I'm perfect. I don't have to. I can be real. And lo and behold, I find that I'm in the company of people that I absolutely adore. They're just lovely. They have these positive personalities. All have the what I call quirks about their character and their interests. They're just it's enriching. It's absolutely lovely. So do birds of a feather flock together? Yeah, I think so. And the curious, sometimes you just find such pure joy in the smallest things. Maybe it's a smile or a gesture or a kindness that's not expected, or doing something more and more. Being able to do things for other people, that's lovely. The commentary today is about stillness. And for those of you who are thinking, hello, darkness, my old friend, hello, darkness, my old friend, we find ourselves on the outside looking in, wondering what went wrong. Yeah, I've had that feeling. Masonry gave us a new way of being, of thinking, of realizing our relationships with others, like-minded and otherwise. Don't have to be me, my goodness. Has the Gestalt changed so much that our rigidity has shone through? What rigidity? Is it that we believe what we want to believe? Is it that stuff? Or we're always afraid of the new? Is it that? Is it us that has brought on the declining interest in this very old fraternal order? Or is it that the values in which it is based are no longer as vital as they once were? Good question. Buddhism isn't a religion, but a way of thinking, a way of being that embraces all faiths. I don't hear concern about relevance, never a concern about the number of people practicing on a given day being up or down over yesterday. The only thing I can imagine is that the way we are measuring our progress isn't incorporating the entire picture. It's not plausible for all members of all lodges to be self-aware. But it is a potential we have never dismissed. Rightly so. The basis of this thinking is despite our mistrusting nature. Within all humanity rests a desire to connect, to befriend, to protect, and even to suspend disbelief and have a sense we can control what happens to us tomorrow. The future takes us along with it. Oh, we can become opinionated. We can act as if act out our concerns. But at the end of the day, understanding provides safety. How far we reach toward that understanding is a variable we explore just as people have done before us. But to have meaning requires more than imagination. It requires acting on those ideas. That's where we find charitable acts done, because they are the ethical thing to do, the right thing. Today, my smartphone can give me quotes from the great minds, reminding me what we do, what our thinking says about our relationships with the world around us. Listen, watch, silence. When we have learned self-discipline, we must compare notes and then ponder. Wonder what music you listen to. What you do, what's it feel like on a beautiful night outside at a cafe with listening to you and your mates with some music playing in the background? And what are we talking about? We're talking about some of the craziness that's going on, the absurdity in humanity that man commits on man. Yeah, maybe. But we might also be talking about the football match or something very pleasurable. There's some beautiful dessert that's being served to us, or this meal, or this savory teas. Keep that in mind. This is Tenderly. You'll recognize the tune, I'm sure. It's from Verve Records. Ben Webster. If life got any simpler, it would be boring. I'm not as frank about the tedium of life. I'm not an Albert Camus, but I like it. The highlights, the drama, just helps us out of the tedium and the predictability. But I'm looking at poetry right now. I want to just frame this a little bit. Why? For as much for my own sake here, why are they interested in poetry? And I've been mining this for years and years and years. And it sort of crept up on me. It wasn't something that I was walking around. I'm not going to brag and say, oh, this is something that I decided when I was little. I might have, but I think especially into the 21st century, where we seem to be worried about the calamity of AI and the system. I think rightfully so. What if AI is the moral high ground that you and I haven't been able to achieve? What if we have it reflects social ideals that we have a notion that we talk about but we don't deliver? What if it's that good that we wonder what comes next? Well, that's the risk, isn't it? It's not going to put a firecracker in our tailpipe. This is going to be, what if it does it better? Well, yeah. I think the other side of that is, what can we learn? Yeah. It's not the machine. Somebody programmed the machine. It's the human context. We're slicing up the digital DNA. Here, a few ideas about the vitality of poetry, if you will allow. Emotional expression. Why? Poetry allows people to express complex emotions and experiences in a condensed and artistic form. I can go and watch a Shakespeare, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and come away impacted by his peeling back layers of that obscure reality, obscure truths. Social commentary. Poets often address important social and political issues, and making poetry a powerful vehicle for activism and commentary. More so in older cultures than where I am. Our culture is still forming. Language and creativity encourages a deep appreciation for language and creativity in a world where concise and impactful communication is valued. Poetry preserves cultural heritage and history and keeping traditions alive through verse. We still have Gilgamesh lingering. The Iliad, the Odyssey, epic poetry. It provides an opportunity for introspection and contemplation, offering different perspectives. In an era of technology, poetry represents a form of artistic exploration and self-expression that's distinct from any other media. Poets often explore profound philosophical and ethical questions, providing valuable perspectives on the human condition. I'm a fan of sonnets. I just like the compactness of them. I should get into more open verse, maybe. But this sonnet is talking about, I find this is William Shakespeare, sonnet number 4, and it's speaking about hindsight. And it's speaking about beauty. Maintain your beauty. The narrator is talking about to this young boy. Now, we make that salacious. Of course, it's a salacious link. This is the Shakespeare coming out of the closet. Or It's, or I think more frankly, it has to do with hindsight and awareness of aging, and awareness of what was and what is very important. This is Shakespeare's, it's called a creative sonnet, and it's aimed, it's claimed to be aimed at fair youth, encouraging him to share his beauty by having children of his own before he dies. It's not speaking to the fair youth. It's a man reflecting. Regrets, yeah. Beauty is seen as a commodity in this. Do I agree with that? No, I don't think it's a commodity. In this, the poet returns to the idea of beauty as a treasure that should be invested for profit. It was this 1602, 1603, something in there. And the young person refuses to have a child is likened to spending inherited wealth on himself rather than investing. Of course you have to have lineage. Of course you have to have an heir. So listen to this. Do you see the old man in this? Do you see the maturity in it then? Unthrifty loveliness, why dost thou spend upon thyself thy beauty's legacy? Nature's bequest leaves nothing but doth lend, and being frank, she lends to those who are free. Then, beauteous naggard, why dost thou abuse the bounteous largesse given thee to give? Profitless usurer, why dost thou so great a sum of sums ye canst not live? For having traffic with thyself alone, thou of thyself, thy sweet self, dost deceive. Then how, when nature calls thee to be gone, what acceptable audit canst thou leave? Thy unused beauty must be tombed with thee, which used lives the executor to be. Do you hear the maturity? Experience. Eh? We're different when we have experience. Do we find beauty in that? We can. Call it bittersweet. This is Sonny Clark, Deep in a Dream. Made it to Blue Note Records. 1961 in that. Sometimes history isn't written by the victor, but about the victor and about the quarrels and tensions that we perpetrate on each other. And, you know, hindsight, does it make any sense? We see, we can calculate consequences and different relationships that occur, but does it make a difference? Because at the end of the day, entropy seems to be more forceful. We're still working around the period here in our history section on coming up to the period where we're looking at the notes of the lodge, this Dutch lodge, seem to be becoming a little vague. This is we know that nationalism was raising its ugly head. And it was happening in the lodge. We want, you know, the lodge to be run by the Dutch, not these others who, you know, we let them in, but they're not going to really have any power, you know. After all, we are the way we are. Here is an interesting comment. At this moment, to the south, the French Revolution had taken a radical and Jacobin turn. At first, very little of those events seems to filter into the proceedings of the lodge. Believe. A myopia that other historians have also noted in the Dutch language press, as opposed to the French language press in the Republic, as well as in the Dutch pamphlets of the time. Instead, the concern was with virtue, which, in quote, if we would all exercise, we would avert much of the slander that the blind world maliciously spreads about us, end quote. Again, in late 1793, the ancient Romans are invoked, as were the ancient Egyptian priests at an earlier meeting. The Roman feast mentioned is that of the god Saturn. Only 2 years later will Saturn once again be celebrated. These minutes contain the key to the illusion. It is a celebration of the banishment of the tyrant Tarquin and his damnable wife Tullia. We may speculate that the celebration of virtual tyrannicide in the late 1793 could not fail to have noticed with approval the execution in that year of the French king, Louis XVI, and his wife, Marie Antoinette. It may also signal a willingness to banish the stadtholder government. Paganism is once again fashionable in the lodge. Quote, our brother orator ascended the chair and entertained us with the customs of the ancient Egyptian priests to transmit the heroic deeds or the histories of the country to posterity by way of metaphoric symbols, which makes us notice how necessary is silence, virtue, and the sociable love of mankind. Once again, we find approval being voiced for a civil religion with pagan connotations. In the early 1780s, patriots had already celebrated their feasts held in their temple of virtue. Almost every 18th century state outlawed deism and atheism. They were associated with the subversion of both church and state. They were distinctively human creeds, easily adaptable, as the English freethinkers were the first to point out, to the needs of a purely secular set of social and political priorities. In the 1790s, deism became the civil religion of revolutionaries all over Western Europe. I thought it's just because it made sense, but in these temples, as our Amsterdam orator put it, men could imitate the practice and custom of Egyptian priests, to sketch the histories or commemorable events of the country in hieroglyphic signs on commemorative columns or obelisks, as well as on the walls of their temples, and in particular, the way in which they accepted the philosophers Plato and Pythagoras as members of their order. No one has ever worked out in detail the Masonic contribution to the cult of reason in revolutionary France, or to the new secular religiosity found throughout Europe and America in the 1790s. Yet the evidence so far assembled suggests that there were such a contribution. Influence of that illusion, what we are as a body of thought, not me personally or you personally, but what we represent on the world scale. Reason, virtue, unpleasant truths. Yeah. This is something I dreamed last night. It's by a fellow that came from a fairly privileged background, studied at the Juilliard. We know him as Miles Davis. 1956. Well, I find that it's time to wrap this up for another week. Thank you for inviting us into your day, or night, or evening. It's a pleasure. I hope we can get together again. It's easy to feel overwhelmed that there's so much going on that we couldn't possibly make a difference. And that is one of the harshest illusions that we carry with us. We can and we are significant. Only it happens in ways that we can't calibrate, we can't begin to calculate. You need to know that virtue does have a bearing. And the more that we can live with that and express that in whatever way we can, it's important. And then take credit, which we often don't do. Take credit that we're able to do things that to and for other people that they don't apparently deserve, except we see that they're worthy. I know the billionaires might look at a starving child or hungry family and say, it's all that father's fault. You know, if they got off their ass and got a good education and a job, if only life was that simplistic. And they can always, everybody can always cite somebody abusing a system as if to justify the mediocrity of their thinking. But those to be able to tolerate, I guess you have to do that, to be able to tolerate the idea that little people are going to bed hungry and going to school hungry and growing up deficient, because we can tolerate that. Here we are reflective, though. We'll get there. And we are different. And in our way, we move forward, and we're never satisfied with the status quo. Never look around. But we can do, in the meantime, we can create some. There's always that next riff, that next gig we can sit in and just have that pure joy. But it always is changing. We're not going to let up. We have work to do. And it ebbs and flows, just like the world around us. So in the meantime, commit acts of random Masonic kindness where you can and when you can. And, you know, if it's as ridiculous as a smile that makes somebody's day and they wonder, what the hell are you smiling? What are you smiling about, you crazy old? Leave them with that lingering. Let's not too, you know. Why not? Why not? I'll see you again soon. Take care of yourselves in the meantime.